I highly recommend Starburst jelly beans if you haven't had any. I didn't look at the clock. And I... But... Jay, stop it. I didn't know what time it was. I thought I had time. So I put a handful of jelly beans in my mouth. And now I have to talk. And it's... inappropriate, and I apologize profusely.
They are tremendous. It's hard not to put a handful.
Yeah, but I wouldn't have. I'm very disciplined about not putting food in my mouth when I'm about to talk because I think that's rude. Plus, you can hear it on the air when someone has food in their mouth. I can hear it on the phone when Jay has food in his mouth or when he takes a sip. I know that he's not able to use all of his mouth and his vocal cords because they're otherwise occupied. So, I don't want you to be asking me what's in your mouth. Plus, I think it's unprofessional to talk with something in your mouth. So, forgive me for that. The music was about to run out, so it was, well, I either apologize or we have awkward silence on the air. You know, neither one of those are beyond the realm of after hours.
And that's fine.
Since we are now just over a week away from Easter, and many people do mark Easter with jelly beans, I highly recommend these Starburst jelly beans. They are delicious. Jay, I will say for the most part, Jay is the candy monster in this equation. But I have been the one who pulls those out of our locker, our candy locker, every night to grab a hand. That's it. That's all I'm allowed is a handful of jelly bellies or not jelly bellies. Sorry, Starburst jelly beans. I'm not eating any more than that because I'm 5 weeks away from a half marathon and I'm trying to be really good. Actually, this week has been so busy with various preparations for my Syracuse course that's coming up and for my trip that I'm taking and the show. And then Jay and I went to a hockey game, which is always tough on a weeknight because it requires going to and from our houses twice. It's a lot because of our hours, of course. And because I have the dog, I can't just leave at 5 o'clock in the afternoon and not go back until 6:45 the next morning. So had to go up and back from Newark to my house. Anyway, so I've been on this weird eating schedule, but allowing myself a handful of Starburst jelly beans every night, again, didn't realize what time it was and put them in my mouth for the wrong time.
And now you leave them in here or I'm going to keep eating them.
That's okay. You apparently are a bottomless candy pit because, as you tell me, you eat candy all the time and look at you, you're fine, right? You try to use that as evidence of why you are completely healthy is that you are not overweight. Great. So the candy is in there for you.
I was doing so well, though, tonight. I didn't have any candy. I wasn't going to have any. Here we are.
What did you have for dinner, Jay?
Oh, no, that's different.
Oh, yes, so different. You're right. It wasn't jelly beans. It was something else that was not real healthy for you. But okay, we'll just ignore. Oh, it's unrelated. Food. Your food is unrelated to your food. Okay. You come up with some strange rules. You know that, right? And then you misremember things like Roger Clemens when he's under penalty of perjury misremembers things.
I don't follow.
No, you never do. Jay did not cheer in the press box at the Devils-Rangers game a few hours ago because there really wasn't much to cheer for. However, I will say the Rangers goal got greater and more intense roars than did the two Devils goals, which I thought was interesting. I was texting, Boomer Esiason is a huge Rangers fan, and so I was texting him photos and just kind of telling him about the atmosphere, and he's like, it's always better for Rangers goals. Anyway, I was actually mesmerized by the atmosphere inside the Prudential Center because these two teams are likely to end up facing each other in the first round of the Stanley Cup playoffs, and so that's kind of fun just to think about reinstituting a local rivalry, which has not been one for a while. I'm trying to think about when it was last a rivalry.
2012, maybe?
Yeah, I was going to say going back a decade, probably. But even then, would you call it a rivalry? So this is kind of fun. It's fun. Like, if you are in a city where they have multiple teams and you have multiple teams to choose from, or your team has a very distinct rival. It's one team, it's one opponent, then you kind of understand when they face each other in the postseason, it becomes a completely different animal. And these two teams are likely to face each other in the Stanley Cup playoffs, and so there's a bit of this home ice advantage on the line. But just in general, because the fans all get into it and hate each other, and because the proximity, right, of Manhattan where the Rangers play to Newark where, in case you don't know, it's across the Hudson River, but it's probably, what, 6 miles? Maybe.
Yeah, if that.
Yeah, if that. So it's pretty cool to have that type of a spicy atmosphere, late regular season game.
You could pretty much see each other's arenas from each other's arenas.
Yeah, you could. No doubt if you were standing up on top of the arena, you absolutely could. A few skyscrapers and a river in between. But, yeah, you can definitely see Madison Square Garden as well as the Prudential Center, which I actually have tickets to go to a concert at the Prudential Center later this summer. And I was sitting in my seat in the press box, which is it's an open air press box. So essentially it's just you're hanging out up above the ice. And I was thinking, ooh, this is going to be a great atmosphere for a concert, too. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Did you tell me we've got someone who's part of the rivalry talking about the rivalry? Yes, no, maybe so. Let's go play it.
That was a great, great game by team. You know, we played really well defensively, and then we scored 2 goals in the first period. That was huge for us. And then we tried to keep it. They score in the second, but we hold it. So that was huge for us, and then great team win.
Somehow, I agree for Vanacek, he had some incredible point blank saves, as did Igor Shesterkin. But there are also a bunch of loose pucks that just kind of glided through the crease. And I'm thinking, how is someone not hopping on that puck and blasting it home or knocking it out of there? There were some moments where it felt like time was suspended. The hockey and hoops playoffs start mid-April. So roughly about the time I get back from my vacation, I will have much catching up to do. But this we know, the Boston Bruins, they have been the best team in hockey all year, and now it's official.
Here's Pastrnak to the right circle, walks in, backhand, he scores! His 53rd goal is an overtime game winner. The Boston Bruins have set a new franchise record. That's their 58th win. The Bruins clinched the President's Trophy, and what we're watching this year is the greatest regular season in the 99-year history of the franchise.
It's nice, but you know, obviously you have your eyes set on some bigger, obviously.
It's fine.
We know there's a lot of work in front of us.
You are not allowed to gloat over a President's Trophy if you are an NHL franchise. That's just not how it works. You're not even allowed to get excited about winning your conference. Also, not the goal. And so when Patrice Bergeron says, it's nice, he really means, it's fine.
Totally fine.
Totally fine. We'll take it, but we're going to hide it in a closet somewhere. It's going to go in a cleaning closet somewhere at the Garden.
It really is. It's totally fine.
It's totally fine, but it's not the goal. Do you think there's a drop we've gotten more out of? It's only been a week and a half, right, since Aaron Rodgers used the word fine
about fine
37 times in his interview with Pat McAfee to talk about how the Packers are moving on. And I kept counting the fines. I finally gave up because there's just too many of them. But do you think we've gotten more mileage out of any Aaron Rodgers drop ever?
It's going on a good run. But I think it was just more funny that after I watched it and you watched it, we both were like, he said fine a lot. He said he really
totally
didn't
fine.
Seem fine, but he said he was fine. Like, we both pointed that out. So.
He's definitely not fine. David Pastrnak had his 53rd goal of the season, and this was early in overtime, so it was pretty quick work of the Columbus Blue Jackets.
Totally fine.
And it's totally fine that the President's Trophy goes to the regular season points leader. It doesn't mean a darn thing, but the Bruins did break the tie for most wins in franchise history. That goes back to the early 70s when the Bruins were a juggernaut. And they're getting close to the wins record, the wins total, I should say, set by, well, it's two teams. Remember, it was the Red Wings going back to the 90s when they were a monster. And then the Lightning tied it just a couple years ago. So the Bruins are getting close to that. We'll see, though. I actually have to look at their... Just give me a second. Right now, they are 58, 12, and 5, and it's totally fine. So 58 and 17 means they're at 75 games. That means that they have 7 to go, right? So there's definitely an opportunity not just to tie, potentially to grab the all-time single-season wins mark. Moving forward, but they are the President's Trophy winners. And that's saying something. It's not generally an indicator of what happens in the playoffs, but the calls there on the Bruins Radio Network with Judd Surratt. The other Boston team that is in competition for a championship was on the road. But before we move on, Jay tells me I can't skip the coach of the Boston Bruins. Congratulations, Jim Montgomery.
Tonight's game was not the standard that we've seen all year. It does exemplify how good of a team we are because of people executing and relishing their roles, and we come out with another win.
I like it. If you can beat teams a variety of ways, and you can beat teams when you're not playing your best, it reminds me of the old adage about golf shots and how you know you're getting better at the game of golf and your swing is getting better when you're... Bad shots are still manageable and still playable. When your bad shots go straight, well, you have less of a problem than you think you do. And so for the Bruins, yeah, they can beat you a bazillion different ways. It feels like they can pound you into submission. They can score a dozen goals while you're sitting around twiddling your thumbs. They do have offensive firepower. They can play defense as well. And so when you have that versatility, and as Coach Montgomery points out, when you don't play your best and you still come away with a win in OT, man, that's one situation that I think the Bruins are favored in regardless of where the game is or what is overtime. And I know anything can happen in overtime, but they just have some lethal weapons on that roster. So Bruins are primed and ready. They are the top seed. Well, they're the best in the NHL. They're the top seed in the East. The Celtics are trying to steal that top seed away from the Milwaukee Bucks, and they took a big step up the ladder on Thursday evening.
Left side of the floor. Tatum dribbles between his legs. Nasty step back. No, three in the air. Got it.
Ugh.
Oh, that was brutal.
Oh, man. Somebody just stepped on my toe then with that move.
It is a 34-point game. Celtics are hit half of their 28 three-pointers. Backdoor cut again. Jaylen Brown, right-hand slam, and he lets out the yell as Mike Budenholzer calls timeout, which you could hear him do over a very quiet crowd. Jaylen shaking off Grayson Allen, goes into the paint, flips it up and in with the right hand. Timeout, Mike Budenholzer, but to say what?
Close the doors, because it's time to go home.
Uh-oh, again.
Joey Tatum looking for a 40-piece drive. Flushes hard with two hands.
Oh, Joe Ingles is like, who put me on this guy?
112-69, 40 for Tatum after a slow start.
If someone wants to explain to me what happened to the Milwaukee Bucks, all I can think is, thanks for showing up, Milwaukee. This is in your own building. What did Drew Holiday call the game against the Pacers on Wednesday? A must win. He called it a must win against a team that stinks and is going nowhere this season. He called that a must win, but not the game against the Celtics on national TV in your own building? And initially, I thought when I saw the beginning of this, well, the early score, right? So when it really started to get out of hand, as you hear with Sean Grandy and Cedric Maxwell, it built up to a nearly 50-point lead. They end up winning by 41 in Milwaukee. But when it started to get out of hand, I'm thinking, okay, Giannis must not be playing. Drew must not be playing. Oh, that's not what was happening. And seeing the highlights, it looked like Boston had a completely different gear. Also, so little attention to detail and by the Bucks. And here's what else I noticed about the Bucks. I don't want to say call them soft because that's not fair, but they were not playing that tough physical defense, that defense that demands respect, that defense. We're not seeing it from the Milwaukee Bucks in this game. Maybe a lack of intensity, maybe because it was the second half of a back-to-back, but this is the NBA. It's schizophrenic. It drives me bonkers sometimes. For those of you who bet on the NBA, I don't even know how. You never know what you're going to get from night to night, and it doesn't always matter who's out there on the court. Jason Tatum with 40 points tonight. Jaylen Brown with 30 points tonight. This tandem for the Celtics is primed and ready for the postseason.
Forgetting about tonight. You know, the game is over. It happened. We have a game tomorrow. And we talked about it in the locker room, right? You know, they all count as one. We won. You know, it don't necessarily mean much, so we got to move on. And, you know, we're going to show how good of a team we are by the way we respond tomorrow. You know, that's all that matters at this point.
A little bit later, we'll hear from Giannis as he attempts to explain what happened exactly. But the Celtics shot 56% from the floor. They hit 22 three-pointers. Also, straight ahead, or not straight ahead, but later on the show, Kyrie Irving. Just why? It was my first question. Second question is what? He's talking about how this is not what he expected when he got to Dallas.
Every time I play with other great players, we've become better.
Except for in Dallas. All right, straight ahead, our friend Michael Duarte of NBC LA. He was there for the opening day game between the Dodgers and the Diamondbacks. Torey Lovello is talking about how there were some flashing lights that were distracting his hitters. So we'll ask about that. And also for Michael, the pitch clock, it's brand new. Pitchers are having to adjust. We know that Shohei Ohtani is actually using the PitchCom device himself so that he can avoid any type of pitch clock violation. He's chosen to do that because he thinks it'll speed up the process and avoid any mindless and useless pitches. So we'll get the down low. We'll get all the info and, of course, the entertainment with Mike coming up next. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio.
You are listening to the After Hours podcast.
The 3-2, fly ball left center field. That's well hit. Way back there, and it is gone, a home run. James Outman hits it the other way. Corbin Carroll went to the gap in left center, leaped as high as he could, couldn't get it. Two-run shot for Outman, and the Dodgers lead now 7-2.
I think everybody, you know, up and down was doing their job, getting on base, getting the next guy up, and you know, we put up 8 runs, and I think it's a testament to our batters and our pitching staff did unbelievable tonight, too.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
James Outman speaking about the Dodgers lineup that for some reason has been fingered as one that's taken a step back to begin 2023 as opposed to a team that has been a World Series contender now for 6-7 years, even going back farther than that. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Always enjoy hearing Charlie Steiner on Dodgers Radio. And because it is opening day, all of the pomp and circumstance and tradition, we're pleased to welcome back to the show for the first time in a long time, our friend Michael Duarte of NBC LA. Michael, what's opening day like at Dodger Stadium?
Hey, Amy, thanks for having me on. Opening day is always a great time of the year. You know, it means that the winter is fading away, spring has returned, baseball is back, we're getting ready for the playoffs and NBA and NHL. But it was a little bit different tonight at Dodger Stadium, if I admit. This is my 10th consecutive opening day.
Whoa!
And it's the first one that was at night. A night game, 7:10 start, a little bit different. We had some East Coast weather, to be honest with you, not just today, but the last few months here in Los Angeles. Thunder, lightning, pouring down rain about an hour and a half before first pitch, and then it just disappeared and the sun came out like nothing happened. That's very East Coast weather, I might say, like those summer storms they like to call them. But other than that, it was the same as usual with the Dodgers. I believe they're 13-2 now on opening day at the stadium. and they drubbed the Diamondbacks 8-2. Even though it's a little bit of a new look roster for the Dodgers this year, mm-hmm. and a new look stadium and new rules for baseball overall, same result when it comes to opening day victory for the Dodgers.
Just out of curiosity, did you have any of that snow that hit California about a month ago, a couple weeks ago?
Yeah, we did. For me, where I'm at, it was large chunks of hail, but
whoa.
People right next to me, snow that lasted maybe a few hours before it melted away. But yeah, that was a first for us here, especially in the area that I'm at, which is called the Valley in Los Angeles. So yeah, that was definitely a first.
Mm. James Outman, a lot of excitement around him playing his first full season with the Dodgers. What was it, a handful of games last year? What's the ceiling for this guy?
Yeah, James Outman, he likes to do debuts better than the Beatles on the Ed Sullivan Show. His first major league debut, he homers on the first pitch in his first at bat at Coors Field. Today, he homers in his Dodger Stadium debut. You know, this was a guy that was not even on the Dodgers' radar as far as somebody who was going to be on the opening day roster. They felt like he still needed a little bit of seasoning at AAA, even though he did have a great little stretch run when he did get called up at the tail end of last season in 2022. But obviously the injury to Gavin Lux opened up a spot. James Outman had a great spring training. He took that spot and ran with it and was very emotional when Dave Roberts told him that he was going to make the opening day roster a little over a week ago. And so he told me after the game that this was an absolute dream come true to hit a home run at Dodger Stadium. He said it feels a little bit different with the crowd and the energy in a sold-out capacity crowd of over 52,000 than what it is back in Oklahoma City and in the minor leagues when he does it.
Why do you think that many prognosticators and baseball analysts have determined this will be a down year for the Dodgers?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I heard you talking about that earlier, that some have them at the bottom of the NL standings. That, to me, just makes my jaw drop at hearing that, because I don't think they will be at the bottom of the NL standings. I can say that pretty confidently. Missing the postseason, I doubt that will happen. But I could maybe see it if there's some prognosticators and predictors that want to say that. But like we said, this is a team that's been dominant for the last 10 years. The third best, I think, record as far as making the playoffs in consecutive seasons and winning the division, similar to the Braves in the 90s and the Yankees. So that's not really going away, and they still have superstars like Mookie Betts and Clayton Kershaw and Freddie Freeman on this team. But I think the reason why, to answer your question, why some people are saying that is, you know, they didn't have the big splashy offseason like they've had in years past. You're talking about a team that got Mookie Betts and then got Freddie Freeman and seemingly always adds the big star and gets the big fish. This year was probably the quietest offseason they've had in a long time, and definitely in recent memory. And they're giving the young guys that they had in AAA, they're giving them a runway to see what they can do at the major league level. We're talking guys like James Outman, who you just mentioned, Miguel Vargas, the starting second baseman today on opening day. We're talking like Michael Grove, a pitcher you're going to see coming out of the bullpen. Ryan Pepio, who's going to be in the starting rotation, and we'll see him here in a couple days. They're giving these rookies a chance to really show what they got, and we'll see, you know, maybe by the trade deadline, if they've done enough to maintain their spot, or if maybe the Dodgers will look to add via a trade or an acquisition that way. But to me, it's that, and it's the lack of starting pitching front line that the Dodgers have seemingly always had year after year. You know, obviously Trevor Bauer's gone, Walker Buehler is hurt. They're missing a lot of guys in that rotation. They lost Trey Turner, which to me, he's one of the best shortstops in the game. His speed was something that was a new addition to the Dodgers the last two seasons, and it's just been a killer for opposing teams and opposing pitchers. I think they're really going to miss Trey Turner this year, but I think with the new shift rules, having a great defensive shortstop like Miguel Vargas stepping in, I think is going to help. So it's going to be interesting to see what this season is. I don't think we can expect them to win 111 games and just break the National League record for wins. But I do think they're going to be a postseason team, whether that is winning the NL West or the wild card regardless.
I mean, their top two hitters are still former MVPs. And then Will Smith, who he can mash the ball. Max Muncy, we know he can too. JD Martinez is their DH. Mm-hmm. And then James Outman is batting eight for them. So I agree that Trey Turner kind of grabs some headlines. And I know their lineup is a little bit different. But if we've learned anything about the Dodgers farm system, generally when they bring young guys up, I mean, it hasn't been a problem in the past. They have too many young guys that they need to use and not enough spots on the field.
Yeah, exactly. And this is a team, and I actually asked James Outman about this after the game. I said, just, you know, how are the Dodgers? Well, I said two questions. A, how are the Dodgers able to, year after year, produce these young talents that come up from the minors and are able to perform right away at the major league level? And two, do they feel any pressure knowing that that is their track record, that guys like Corey Seager comes up and wins Rookie of the Year, Cody Bellinger comes up and wins Rookie of the Year, and year after year, they have somebody, Walker Buehler's another example, that just steps up that you maybe not thought of or was going to be ready to perform, and they perform. And now James Outman and Miguel Vargas have to step into those shoes, but they seem ready to do so. And what James Outman told me, though, is he said it all comes down to the player development department that the Dodgers have. Mm. They get these guys ready to play at the major league level from single A all the way up to triple A into the majors. And they do it not just on the field, but off the field. And they work on things that maybe other teams are not working on, and that's how they get these guys so ready. So, you know, as I said, Altman's a guy to look for. Miguel Vargas is going to be another guy that I think fans and your listeners should be watching out for. His bat-to-ball skills are amazing. He can play multiple positions. So I think those are two names you really want to watch out for this year.
Yet another hallmark of some of the young guys for the Dodgers, even guys who've moved on, is that they can play multiple positions. Michael Duarte is with us from Los Angeles after covering Dodgers opening night for NBC LA. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence here on CBS Sports Radio. Before we move on, I have to ask, you know these Dodgers so well. Is there anyone on the Dodgers roster in the clubhouse who would be brave enough to step up on opening day and sing the national anthem like Adam Wainwright did?
Oh my gosh, I did see the clip of that. That was pretty impressive.
I know.
I don't know about this team. You know, Yasiel Puig was always a guy that was not afraid to humiliate or embarrass himself. He'd be a guy that comes to mind that would take the mic and do that. Dave Roberts' daughter is an amazing singer. She sang the national anthem. Justin Turner, longtime Dodger who's no longer with us, who looks so different now in red with the Red Sox.
Yep.
His wife Courtney loves to sing the national anthem. She sang it a couple times at Dodger Stadium. But as far as players, I don't know if this roster yet, and I'll get to know some of the young guys. If anybody has the camaraderie or the confidence to go out there and belt the national anthem the way Adam Wainwright did.
Yeah, he did. He was slow and he was deliberate. And so he was really trying to work the notes, but man, the smile on his face, he was so proud of himself. You could tell he had practiced it a bazillion times to be ready. Gosh.
Hey, he went from World Baseball Classic final to singing the national anthem on opening day. He's had quite the last 10 days or so. And if you get to it, we can talk about some other interesting things that happened on opening day. The lights, I know you mentioned, we can discuss that. But fans didn't see this on the telecast. You didn't see this on the radio or the telecast. But there was a fan who jumped out of the outfield pavilion over the new home run seats onto the field to propose to his girlfriend in the middle of the game and then got absolutely trucked by a Dodgers security member. I'm sure it's gone viral. If not, I will retweet it once find it. But sign that security guy to be a linebacker in the NFL tomorrow.
Nice. That's amazing. Okay, I'm glad you brought up the lights because I wanted to ask. Let's hear from Torey Lovello, who was talking about this after the game. Didn't think it's intentional, but definitely that the lights were bothering some of the D-backs pitchers.
Dodgers beat us fair and square today. I don't know. I just take notice of it when I'm, on the field. Mound visit, and I see the lights going on and off for pitches that are being thrown and warm-ups. There was a couple cases. I don't think anything was done maliciously. They got to be better. We'll figure that out.
They got to be better, Michael. What does that mean? What's going on with the lights at Dodger Stadium?
So fans who don't know and your listeners that don't know, the Dodgers spent millions of dollars over the course of the off season and took 2 months to replace all the previous HID light fixtures with brand new custom LED lights, the state-of-the-art lights that no other stadium has except for SoFi Stadium that I'm aware of. I do know there are other teams and baseball teams who have LED lights, but nothing like the level that the Dodgers have had. I noticed it was a little bit better visibility for players and fans, as apparently it's going to reduce the energy consumption they've had with the old lights by 50%. It's supposed to improve broadcast quality. But moreover, you get this really cool lighting experience that can all change colors. It's going to look great for concerts. But as I wrote in my column today, excuse me, you know, among the rookies who made their debut with the Dodgers, the lights made their debut too. And with rookies are going to come rookie mistakes. And of course, whoever the lighting operator was, I think he pulled that dimmer switch a little bit too quickly at times. There was one play on a Will Smith fly ball to right field that scored some runs that whoever's running the lights, the light operator flipped that switch a little too early. So the lights actually dimmed on the D-back in the middle of a play. One new thing they're doing is they are turning the lights off and playing the Evil Empire theme from Star Wars anytime
yes!
a bullpen change occurs for the opposing team. So I'm sure Troy Lovello didn't like that. But I did joke with Dave Roberts after the game. He said that now Dodger Stadium has a new competitive advantage. And I told him, hey, stop flipping that switch, you know, under your seat in the dugout to mess with the D-backs. But I think there is, I think overall the lights are going to be great. The fans are going to love them. But I do think there's going to be some growing pains as we go through it a little bit. And I think opposing teams are going to hate it. But, hey, that's the new Dodger Stadium home field advantage.
Mm. Michael, we're going to quickly transition because the play-in tournament is where the Lakers find themselves right now. LeBron James has returned, but they are sitting right at 500. Anthony Davis says they have all the right pieces. They can find the form. In your opinion, how dangerous can they be?
Yeah, I think now that with the Russell Westbrook trade and all the moves they made at the NBA trade deadline, they are a heck of a lot deeper, and they've finally done what success around LeBron James has always been, which is put shooters around LeBron James, and now put shooters around LeBron and Anthony Davis. You got guys like Malik Beasley, Austin Reeves, Lonnie Walker, obviously D'Angelo Russell, now guys who can shoot the three at a high clip. And it gives the Lakers a lot of versatility as well, even by adding a backup center in Mo Bamba, who I know is hurt right now, but should be back for the postseason. The Lakers have been one of the better defensive teams since that trade in the NBA. So have the Bulls, who got Patrick Beverley, who was traded out in that deal. And they have a great record. So it looks like they could make some noise. My question is it too little too late? To me, if you end up in that 9 or 10 spot and somehow you can win back-to-back games and then get a first-round date with the Denver Nuggets, that's not good for the Lakers. But if they can climb out of where they are now and maybe get to that sixth spot and get them out of the play-in and potentially a first-round matchup with the Sacramento Kings, who, you know, we're all about light the beam and we're all happy for Mike Brown and that team's success, but I think they don't have the postseason experience that LeBron and AD and these Lakers have, and I think you might see a first-round upset if the Lakers can get to that sixth seed and square off with the Kings.
Mm. Probably before we talk to you again here on the show, I will make my big trip to Arizona and we'll hike the Grand Canyon. I don't know if you've been there before, but I need some encouraging words from you, West Coast hiking guy.
Yeah, so as someone who's gone to spring training in Arizona, like I said, 10 years now, you're going to love it. You're going to love the hiking. The Grand Canyon is amazing, especially on the Arizona side. I also think on the Arizona side, you might be able to get to that, I don't know what they call it, like the glass bridge that kind of goes out. That's pretty cool if you get to check that out. But definitely go to Sedona. You're hearing me first.
Okay.
Sedona, you're going to love the hiking. You're going to love the shopping. You're going to love the food. Go to Sedona, Arizona. And the last thing I'll say, Amy, is I'm so glad you went to a live game, even though it was hockey. And I love live hockey. But I'm just so glad you were at live sporting events again. I know how much you love that.
I do love that. And we also love talking to you. You're one of our favorites. So as Jay and I were sitting there in the press box at the Prudential Center, I said, let's check on Mike and see what he's doing and if he's at the game. So we're always glad to talk to you. Happy opening day. You can find Mike on Twitter at Michael J. Duarte. And he is an award winner now with NBC LA and one of our best buds here on the show. Thanks, Mike.
Thank you. Enjoy your trip to Arizona, Amy.
Thank you. I'm going to love it. I can't wait. I'm trying not to get excited because it's still a couple weeks away, but do you know this is the last day of March? For those of you who are into your Friday, I know some of us are still on our Thursday night, but some of us are into our Friday, and it is March 31st. Friday, March 31st. So happy almost Friday and happy almost April. Wow, and happy almost Easter, for heaven's sakes. It's all happening.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
We're going to get to what we said to each other because I was misquoted by saying that I said, "F you, congratulations," after the game when we saw each other, which is not what I said.
I was like, I don't remember that one. I was lost at words, and you didn't really say much, but I know you didn't say "f you."
I mean,
this is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
I am all in next year for the Kelce Brothers podcast, which is the New Heights podcast. It became one of the top podcasts in the world this year, and that's not just sports content, all content, and of course. It couldn't have been better timing, right? Because the two Kelce brothers both play in the Super Bowl on the very first year that they do a podcast. They'd only done 25 or so episodes when they got to the Super Bowl. Talk about from the category of you can't make this stuff up. They start the podcast at the beginning of the year. They both survive to play in the Super Bowl. Travis and his Chiefs beat Jason and his Eagles. Both will be returning for another season in the NFL in 2023. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. The reason we bring up the Kelce brothers, if you haven't seen this, Jay, here's the problem with retweeting the video. Does it have the language bleeped out or no? It does. Okay. Because I wouldn't want you to retweet a video that had the inappropriate language. Well, the language that is a little bit over the top. Podcast, fine. Twitter, no. Jason Kelce presents his brother, his younger brother, Travis, with a picture of all 32 NFL head coaches, and Travis has to name as many of them as he possibly can, and the results are hysterical.
We show players this picture, and they have to name each coach in this picture. Let's give it a Travis Kelce try right now.
I'm the worst with names, but I can tell you team.
Starting on the left.
Chargers, Giants,
yep.
San Fran. Who the f*** is that guy?
No chance you're getting this one. 0% chance.
No clue. Jets. After Jets, nothing. I've never seen that man in my f-ing life.
This is so good.
I mean, three in a row. I have no idea.
Oh, those dudes are.
That was our offensive coordinator, Shane Steichen, for the Colts. Come on, Travis.
So who's next to Dougie P? Who the f-
You should know that one. You should definitely know that one.
I know D'Amico. Who's the other one?
You should know him because he's arguably your biggest rival.
Oh, that is. Yeah, that's Cincy. He's a dog.
Start with Matt Foley.
Cowboy. Matt Foley. Again, never seen this f***ing guy in my life.
It's my defensive coordinator.
Miami. There's no way that guy coaches in the NFL, man. Then Pete Carroll, Harbaugh, obviously, you know, the next Rivera, Broncos Country, Let's Ride, Gordon Bombay. We got the Packers, and then no clue. And then Bills.
Oh, my gosh.
I'm not going to lie. I don't know how much better I could do.
Kelce, Jason Kelce squealing. That's him squealing like a piglet in the background. It's hysterical. That's him. That's Jason Kelce. All right, I didn't do the homework. I just happened to, meaning I didn't go through and write down all of the coaches that Travis couldn't name, but I did find an article that did it for me. So this is what he missed when he says, who the bleep is that guy? And Jason first starts laughing. He doesn't know Josh McDaniels of the Las Vegas Raiders. Now, granted, Josh has only been in his division for 1 year, but he was the offensive coordinator for the Patriots for how many years?
Bro, I have no idea who those dudes are.
And then they move on down the line when he says, I've never seen that man in my bleeping life. He's talking about Bears coach Matt Eberflus, who, okay, again, has only been a head coach for a year, so maybe that makes sense. Travis did not know either of the Eagles coordinators. You can hear that. Jason's laughing. That's my D coordinator. And he mentioned Shane Steichen. So remember, both Eagles coordinators took head coaching jobs. He didn't know either one of those guys. They actually called Mike McCarthy Matt Foley, who's a Saturday Night Live character. Remember, Travis, that part I didn't know. I had to look it up. Travis recently hosted Saturday Night Live. And get this, Cleveland Browns, you guys are the butt of everyone's NFL jokes. This time it's not even me. When Travis says there's no way that guy coaches in the NFL, man, he's talking about Kevin Stefanski of the Cleveland Browns. Oh, no. Apparently, he got Andy Reid. Now, I didn't hear him mention Andy Reid, but apparently he did get Andy Reid. Oh, my gosh. So the New Heights podcast, it's all fun and games. I don't know whether or not they're sober, only that Jason squeals like a pig when he laughs. It's awesome. And Travis knew that Mike McDaniel was a head coach in the NFL, but not Kevin Stefanski.
Who the fuck is that guy?
I mean, I feel as though if you're going to be basing your assessments on looks, McDaniel would be the one that you wouldn't think would be coaching in the NFL. I mean, Kevin Stefanski, the Bengals coach too is Zach Taylor.
Oh, that is. Yeah, that's Cincy.
How do you not know Zach Taylor, right? You've seen him or he's been game planning for you. Anyway, Travis failed miserably, and it's actually funnier that way. They are both goofs. And so along with Tom Brady's podcast, now I'm going to have to listen to the Kelce brothers every week. Stuck in football hell. It's After Hours, CBS Sports Radio.